The doctor. You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Andrew McRoberts, here to represent the Board of Supervisors of Richmond County. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
This case presents the question of whether an unauthorized administrative official can unknowingly and unwittingly approve a site-specific zoning change in violation of the legislative will of the elected Board of Supervisors,
that
contrary
official,
to the health
that official state. Is the agent of the county, is he not?
He is, in fact, the agent.
And he was acting in his capacity as the agent of the county, is that correct?
No, he was acting outside of his authority in unauthorized fashion.
I asked if he was acting in his capacity. He represented himself to be what he had been appointed to be.
His title was the zoning administrator. However, in this particular act, he had no authority. He was acting outside.
He was the zoning administrator.
He had no authority to approve zoning applications?
Not this one, Your Honor, because of the clear...
Did he have any authority to approve zoning applications?
He had authority to approve zoning applications. However...
So every mistake made by an administrator means necessarily that the administrator is acting ultra vires?
No. If you look at 15.2-2286A4, the zoning administrator is authorized to enforce the law, which he did not do in this case, or to issue vested rights opinions, permit things that are allowed by the law. He has no authority to change the law or authorize things that are clearly not permitted. It is stipulated in this case and found by the court.
Well, we have no authority to misinterpret the law, but once in a great while we do, and it still holds the finality of judicial judgment.
Well, unlike the act by the zoning administrator in this case, which was held to be erroneous and stipulated by the parties to be erroneous and unauthorized, this court, as it was once said, is not right because it is the highest court, but it's right because it's the last court. And certainly errors by this court are certainly not errors because they are the final word on the subject, unlike the zoning administrator.
What about the circuit court? It's made a decision, 30 days has passed, nobody's appealed it. We all look at it and say, it's definitely wrong. No doubt about it, it was wrong. It's still authorized.
No, Your Honor. He has the ability to enforce the law. In this case, he did not. The zoning administrator gets to act as far as interpretations and official determinations, in the gray areas between the black and white of the law. Only the Board of Supervisors gets to say what the black and white of the law is. But as this court knows, there's no perfect law, no perfect ordinance. There will be gray areas in between.
And there are no perfect people. I mean, you're
correct.
Basically saying anytime your zoning administrator gets something wrong, then he's acting ultra vires.
No. In this case, it is clear that he was only authorized to act in the gray area between the black and white, and as found by the court and stipulated by the parties, the law is clear on this point, that this particular garage was unauthorized.
The parties can't stipulate the law.
The
parties cannot stipulate the law. They can stipulate the facts.
They did stipulate the facts. And in this case, it was not something that he intended to authorize. He did not know he was authorizing. And the court specifically found that Mr. Quick testified that he had no authority and did not know. And the other fact that is true on the face of the record is that there is nothing in this zoning certificate that he approved that actually applies the section that is supposedly going to be waived here, 2-3-6, that says you can't build an accessory structure taller than the primary structure. And there's nothing on the four corners of this zoning certificate that was approved that talks about the height of the primary structure. Therefore, 2-3-6 is never implicated.
What does 2311 do if it doesn't grant vested rights estoppel protection?
Well,
if the Board of Supervisors can later just do whatever they want to do, notwithstanding what the administration has told the landowner, what does the statute do? What's the point of the statute?
15.2-2311C applies to intentional authorized acts of the zoning administrator. There are many cases where there is a gray area in the ordinance, and the zoning administrator is required to say as between A and B, it means A and not B. And so if they had, in fact, applied for something where there was a legitimate question of interpretation and determination that the zoning administrator was required to make as between A and B, and he said it's A,
but
then 60 days later he can't change and say, no, it means B.
That is a finesse that doesn't appear anywhere in the language of the statute.
Well, the finesse that it doesn't appear anywhere in the statute is the fact that an order requirement decision termination that is void ab initio under the common law of this court can somehow be changed by language that does not address the Dillon Rule or the void ab initio doctrine, and is not certainly manifest of the General Assembly that they intended to do so. I mean, that is what is finessed and not in the wording of the statute. The appellees would suggest that that this language, without addressing whether there is an authorized or unauthorized order requirement decision determination, that this language was intended to overcome the common law. And this court itself recently has held that that type of intent from the General Assembly must be manifest on the face of the code. And in this case, there is nothing manifest about this language to suggest that an unauthorized void act is somehow valid.
But are you saying that 2311C, if the judgment call is debatable, the lower administrator can get it wrong, actually in fact wrong, but it was debatable and is protected by the statute, right?
Well, the only reason why it would be considered wrong is because the zoning administrator himself or herself has changed their position on that interpretation.
All right, well, let's say they have, and the higher people say it's wrong. Okay, if it's truly wrong and a court agrees with it, it would be void ab initio if there weren't a curative or a vesting statute.
No, wrong is, there's a difference between language like this that is clear on its face and agreed so by the parties, that is clear and its meaning is obviously prohibits this garage, and a case where there is a legitimate question. That is the gray area under which a zoning administrator has authority to act. And when the zoning administrator has authority to act and does in fact act, then 60 days comes and goes and all the other requirements are met.
Even if a court later says, well, he got it wrong, it was a tough call, but he did get it wrong, that's not in fact the way the rule works.
Well, that's the other part of this case that I think is really significant and perhaps threshold for the court, and that is that 2311C, whether it allows a vested right or not, and we certainly say it does not, certainly does not apply to change the law or to stop a Board of Supervisors, which, like the Planning Commission in the Falls Church James case, has authority to enforce the law. They brought an independent action asking for a declaratory judgment for an injunction to enforce the law that the plaintiffs, the landowners themselves, admitted they violated.
So long as the right entity brings the lawsuit, it just wipes out any effect that this statute would have. It's just a shell game.
It is not a shell game, Your Honor. What it is a conspicuously precise statute, like a number of other statutes this court has applied in recent years, that seeks to change the common law. In this case, it doesn't change the common law of the Dillon Rule and the void ab initio doctrine, but it does apply the rule that says that under no circumstances can a zoning administrator be a stop to essentially change their interpretation of the law.
But a Board of Supervisors can blow right through it. Because it doesn't matter. If they bring the deck action, the enforcement action, none of the vesting, none of the estoppel principles, none of it matters.
Well, the statute itself doesn't apply to public bodies. This court held that in the James case. And so, I don't know about blowing by, but I think it's an important check to say that if the law is clearly being violated, if an administrator has clearly stepped outside of his or her authority, the governing body certainly has the authority under the statute to enforce its statute, and the court has the province to say what the law is.
But it even goes further than that from what you're saying, because even if the zoning administrator is operating in the gray area that you say 2311 applies to, if the Board of Supervisors brings an action saying we disagree with his interpretation, it doesn't matter what the zoning administrator decides.
Well, remember the type of facts that we have here, where there is a clear provision, and everyone in the case from both sides and the court said it was a clear provision that plainly prohibited this garage. This is not an area where the zoning administrator has authority to act. So in that type of a case,
I'm talking about the next case, because what you're saying is going to apply not just to this case, it's going to apply to all of them. And you were saying that 2311 deals with this gray area, but you're also telling us Even if the Board of Supervisors disagrees with the zoning administrator's decision within the gray area, they can trump it by just bringing their own declaratory judgment action.
Well, the situation is, even in a declaratory judgment suit, the plaintiff has a burden to prove that their version of the law is the correct one.
Well, suppose the board does. The question is still on the table. It's not been answered.
It's a fair question. If this were not this case, which is clear and black and white and erroneous and unauthorized, but instead a gray area like I've suggested, if it were that, for example, let's say that the terrain of Richmond County was much different than it really is, and there are steep slopes, and the house is on the front of the property, it slopes steeply away, and there's a garage that is slightly higher than the primary structure from the foundation, but much lower in topography or above sea level. And the language of 2-3-6 says that the accessory structure can be no taller than the primary structure. Well, in that case, what does that mean? Does that mean taller from the foundation? Does it mean taller from sea level or from relative height? At that point, if the roads had provided a proposed building permit with a zoning certificate saying, please approve this, and the zoning administrator exercised discretion and judgment and reasoning, which is also required by your Norfolk 102 decision and the definition of determination itself, and had said, well, I believe that it means one instead of the other, whichever he decided, then I believe that 60 days later he would, in fact, assuming all the requirements were met, would, in fact, be prohibited from changing his position to the detriment of the landowner.
So, but you're saying that the Board of Supervisors could still bring their deck out because we think he's wrong.
But let's assume that the board did in that kind of a case. The board would be faced with an argument that it means one instead of the other when both are perfectly permissible readings of the code.
But they don't believe one is perfectly permissible.
I understand
that. But that's going to be their position, their deck action.
Correct. But then the other side has the smoking gun, which is the zoning administrator's interpretation.
But that's not binding on the court. I mean, the court could say, you know, You are a very diligent, earnest zoning administrator, and you made your finding in good faith. But here the Board of Supervisors disagrees, and we have a de novo review of a legal question. But Board of Supervisors, you're right.
That would be
and
a
so it wipes out and then tear down your garage. And
ultimately, is the province of this court and the courts below you to declare what the law is. There's no question about that.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that this statute...
Therefore, this statute provides no protection.
It does, in fact. Under the case I am talking about, where there is, in fact, a gray area and discretion to be administered.
And the Board of Supervisors agrees that it's a gray area.
Or chooses not to bring the lawsuit. You know, what I'm saying is there are very, very strong defense that the landowner can certainly bring forward, which is the evidence of the zoning administrator's determination itself, which, as I posited under this hypothetical, is permissible and reasonable under the circumstances. And I don't believe a circuit judge would unseat that at that point. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, good morning. I'm Monica Monday. My co-counsel is Dave Bug, and together we represent the Rhodes family. The trial court correctly found that Section 2311C applies in this case. The zoning administrator issued a certificate of compliance that authorized the construction of a two-story garage in the R1 district, and that was exactly the structure that was shown on the application. That certification meant that the proposed structure complied in all respects with the zoning ordinance. The Rhodes relied upon that certificate in good faith, and they built the garage.
May I ask you this?
Yes, Your Honor.
Am I right or wrong, but there's no win for you unless you can distinguish James?
Well, I disagree, Your Honor, but James is distinguishable. In James, it dealt with the authority of the Planning Commission versus the zoning administrator. And actually, Your Honor, the holding in that case turned on two different points. One was that what the zoning administrator did was an interpretation of the zoning ordinance, which this court clearly held does not qualify under
2311. Alternative holding or dicta holding, whatever you want to call it, which
right.
is it only apply, doesn't apply to the Planning Commission, doesn't apply, and by logic it would be okay, and it doesn't apply in the Board of Supervisors.
But not that logical step, Your Honor. The problem in James was that the zoning administrator did not have authority to even give the interpretation that he did. Only the Planning Commission had the authority to decide whether that property could be consolidated. So it was not this court did not reach the issue of does the statute apply to the Board of Supervisors? The question was, did the zoning administrator even have authority in the first place to give the opinion that he did? The answer was no. Now, here, it is undisputed that the zoning administrator had the authority to issue a certificate of compliance.
Yeah, I thought that case dealt with who was the decider or the interpreter, not who was the enforcer, which is the expanded reading that's being tendered to us today.
Correct, Your Honor. And also, too, to go to Justice Mims's question from the beginning, the question of isn't the zoning administrator the agent of the Board of Supervisors? I mean, both the zoning ordinance and the Virginia Code say so. The zoning ordinance itself, the Richmond County Zoning Ordinance, in the definitional section, which is 5-3, defines, they call it a land use administrator, but defines the zoning administrator as the representative of the Richmond County Board of Supervisors who has been appointed to serve as the agent of the governing body in administering this ordinance. And also, too, in Virginia Code Section 15.22.86, A4, it also states that the zoning administrator is the agent of the board. They are one in the same. So to say that the Board of Supervisors could bring an injunction action to bypass the clearly intended remedial effect of this statute is absolutely absurd. And not only that, but we have extremely plain and unambiguous language. This court has addressed this statute before and has never said it's ambiguous. The parties agree it is plain and unambiguous. There are three exceptions to this statute. Malfeasance of the zoning administrator, fraud of anybody, and clerical mistakes. There is no exception in this statute for enforcement actions by the Board of Supervisors.
I'm trying to think of an instance in which the statute would have binding force under the county's argument, and I can't think of one. It just essentially, the Board of Supervisors, anytime it's displeased, could just bring an enforcement action. So the whole purpose of the statute was just a head fake to property rights of no consequence.
Right. I mean, it completely destroys the whole purpose of the statute. And this court has been very clear about what this statute means. It is intended to permit a use that is otherwise not permitted under the statute. And the reason why this statute was enacted, which is clear from just the piles of case law that preceded its enactment, is that this is to correct an injustice to property owners, which occur when they rely to their detriment on erroneous zoning determinations. And this happens a lot. So the legislature, in its wisdom, enacted this statute to protect property owners when 60 days is passed.
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but going back to James and trying to understand the paragraph that begins by its terms, it says, by its terms, the statute only limits the subsequent actions of a zoning administrator or other administrative officer. The Planning Commission, however, is neither, because administrative officer is not defined in the statute, give its ordinary meaning. The term administrative officer is singular. A Planning Commission is not, blah, blah, blah. That one paragraph with three sentences appears to me to be talking not about the original erroneous decision, but the administrator that can't change the original erroneous decision, as stated here, the subsequent actions. Is that what it means? I mean, I'm struggling probably like you are trying to understand the paragraph.
No, Your Honor, and I think that what this goes to is the whole purpose of the statute, which this court has said is a vesting statute. Once the three requirements of the statute are met, that there be an order requirement, determination or decision by the zoning administrator, the passage of 60 days, and good faith reliance. Once that occurs, the rights are vested. The Board of Supervisors and no one else can come back later and try to undo the vesting. That's the legislative will that is expressed in the plain language of the statute.
I'm just trying to understand this one paragraph in James. It talks about that we have an administrator who makes its first decision, and then we have the literal statute that says a later administrator or administrative officer can't change it. And then James comes along and says, well, the Planning Commission is not an administrative officer, period. Neither is the Board of Supervisors. That's their whole argument.
But Your Honor, what was happening in that case was that the property owners were relying on the interpretation from the zoning administrator, who didn't have the authority to give an opinion on consolidation in the first place.
Well, in this case, the first administrator didn't have the authority to approve the garage. So where does that get you?
He did have authority to issue the certification, but yes, he did so incorrectly. But there could not have been the good faith reliance also because we had an opinion, an interpretation by the zoning administrator. But the problem was is that they couldn't rely on it because he didn't have the authority in the first place to do it, and it was the Planning Commission, and they were not expressly covered. But again, the Board of Supervisors and the zoning administrator are one in the same. They are the same. Now, if they are different, then the relief that the legislature has provided for the board is found under 2311A, which is a BZA appeal. So if the board had disagreed with its agent, the one that it hired and authorized by its zoning ordinance to enforce its zoning ordinance, it could have appealed to the BZA within the 30-day window provided under 2311A. It did not do so. Now, the other argument that is made here is that that void determinations are excluded from coverage under this statute, and that somehow there is this gray area rule that the legislature intended. And that simply cannot be found anywhere in the plain language of this statute. Again, there are three exclusions in this statute. They are plainly worded, and nowhere is there an exclusion for void determinations. Now, the legislature knows how to distinguish between void determinations and even void and even determinations that are void ab initio. It has done so throughout Title 15.2. And we've cited in page 14 of our brief several examples where the legislature in Title 15.2 used the words void and void ab initio, and yet the legislature did not use those terms in this statute. We therefore know that it did not intend to exclude void determinations. In fact, that's the whole reason why the statute exists, is to protect property owners from those determinations. Not only that, but to find that void determinations are excluded under the statute would destroy the entire legislative scheme that the legislature has enacted. And we find that under the two vesting statutes. The 12311C is intended to provide vesting in impermissible uses. The other vesting statute, 2307, is intended to permit the vesting in permissible uses. If you say that void determinations are excluded, you have destroyed the entire legislative scheme. The county also argues that there needs to be a specific determination about the height requirement and that there was not one here. First of all, the statute, again, does not require this. Nowhere in the plain language can this be found. There are only two requirements for an order, requirement, decision, or determination, and that's that it be written and that it be by the zoning administrator. Those requirements have been satisfied. And again, the legislature knows how to do this if it wants to. In another provision, I just mentioned 2307, the other vesting statute. In 2307B7, which deals with significant affirmative governmental acts, this provision is found. And this is a significant affirmative governmental act. When the zoning administrator issues a written order, decision, requirement, I'm sorry, written order, requirement, decision, or determination, the same thing we have here, relating to the permissibility of a specific use or density of the landowner's property that is no longer subject to review, et cetera, et cetera. So we have the very same exact legislative language, written order, requirement, decision, or determination, and it relates to a specific act. The legislature knows how to do that. It chose not to do so in 2311C and instead that it be a broad protection for property owners. Nevertheless, the certificate itself plainly allowed the construction of what was shown on the document, a two-story accessory structure garage in the R1 district. Therefore, all the legislative requirements have been satisfied. The county finally argues that the zoning administrator did not knowingly waive the height requirement. To sound like a broken record again, the statute does not require a knowing waiver. The word waiver doesn't even appear in the statute. The zoning administrator, according to the county, doesn't even have the authority to waive the zoning ordinance. So why would the legislature include such a requirement? And finally, the county's argument is inconsistent with the statute itself. The county reads the statute to both require a knowing waiver and to exclude it. And for this, we can look at the malfeasance exception. Malfeasance means unlawful or intentional conduct. A knowing waiver can amount to the same thing. So why would the legislature, on the one hand, require a knowing waiver for the statute to apply, and then on the same hand, exclude a knowing waiver, malfeasance, from the operation of the statute? It just does not make any sense. The county's arguments gut the statute. They render it meaningless. We ask this court to give effect to the intent of the legislature. Thank you.
All right. Rebuttal, Madam Clerk. Clerk, before he begins his rebuttal, would you come up to the podium and clean up the spill that was left there so that he can use the entire podium? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Other golden, duties as assigned.
The Golden State Warriors and Cleveland Cavaliers can use you.
All right.
You may be sure.
Just like the Planning Commission in the James versus City of Paul's Church case, the Board of Supervisors has authority to make a decision about whether they believe that the code is being enforced properly. They also have the duty to supervise the zoning administrator, and when they step out of line in an unauthorized fashion. We've cited in our brief 15.2-2208 and 2209 that plainly gives the board the authority to seek an injunction to enforce the clearly written law, just like the Planning Commission had the authority to enforce the plainly worded law in James' case.
Can I interrupt you there? In James, though, there appear to be two separate independent bases for the decision of the court. One was the one you just mentioned, but the other was that there wasn't actually an order here. It was just an interpretation.
Well, in this case, we don't believe it was also, it's not an order, as a matter of fact, either,
my
because there's no reasoning
involved. My point is that the second ground is independently sufficient, logically and legally, to support the holding of the court. So which of the two is the dicta holding?
In this case, the Supreme Court mentioned both, and so this court would know best what exactly it did. It gave two alternative, fully supported reasons for their decision, and we're certainly relying significantly on really both, but certainly the one that says that that the statute clearly only applies to administrators and zoning administrators, and that the Planning Commission as a public body, quote, is neither, unquote. Certainly, we agree that the General Assembly knows very easily how to talk about the void ab initio doctrine, and they know how to mention governing body, and they've done that, it's replete throughout 15.2. They have not done that here, and certainly, while there are many policy reasons that have been raised by the appellees in this case on why it should mean this or it could mean that, it is not the province of this court to say that the law means anything other than the clear and plain meaning, even if those policy goals might be laudable or appropriate. In this case, we are the only interpretation and explanation of this language that's consistent with all of your case law and all of the language. Contrary to the appellee's argument, we're not asking to insert language or say it means something other than exactly what it means. The common law of this commonwealth has, since time immemorial, said under the Dillon Rule and the void ab initio doctrine that if an administrator acts contrary to the law, they have no authority to approve something, and therefore it is void ab initio, and it is of no effect. And so that being the case, we believe, both as a fact and as a matter of law, that there is no order requirement decision termination, so there's no vesting, and even if there were vesting, it certainly does not extend to the Board of Supervisors. Thank you very much.
Call the next case.